Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, nonconformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, welcome to Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. Thank you so much for joining us here today for episode 6, season 5. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, and we are now available on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Annex, and iTunes. It is Saturday, the 11th of June, 2022. At least that's when this episode first goes out. Not sure when you're tuning in, but let me assure you, whether it is today, tomorrow, next week, or next year, you are guaranteed to be in safe poetic company for the next 60 minutes as we feature Kulak queens, beheaded ghosts, Hungarian composers, tearless robots, letters to leaders, and silent subtitles. Probably you will have heard some of my guests before. Possibly you already have some of their collections sitting on your bookshelves. But if not, feel free after the show to head on over to www.eatthestorms.com, and there you will find a podcast section with a listing for every episode, enabling you to find, follow and fan out on all of today's guests. This is Eat the Storms, and I hope you enjoy the show. My first guest today on Eat the Storms is an award-winning writer, director, theatre and filmmaker, and the artistic director of the Smashing Times International Centre for the Arts and Equality. She has won a number of awards, including the GSK Ireland Impact Award, the Dublin Bus Company Spirit Award and a National Lottery Good Cause Award. She specialises in transformative arts practice, using interdisciplinary and socially engaged arts practice to promote equality, human rights, gender equality, diversity and peace. She has worked extensively in Northern Ireland, using arts to promote peace building, reconciliation and positive community relations. Today, with us to share 4 pieces, 3 of which you're going to hear now and another at the end of today's show, I am delighted to welcome to the podcast Mary Moynihan.
I am showing here 4 poems. The first one is called Freedom, and freedom is my way to speak out against the atrocities of war and intolerance and the destructive impact of greed in our world. Democracy is not a given, it can be taken away, and the poem is a way of acknowledging the darkness of our world and the power of people who come together and who dance together for peace and freedom.
What price we pay to appease the hawks who claim fate as an artifact? Their armies stalk those against their pact of a new world order, decreed by human gods. We follow a woodworm father, war-hungry leaders, and believe, against the odds, the beguiling sophistry of educated men who promise victory in loud decrees. Banker, imam, politician, priest, sitting down to feast on the womb of hope as our voices cease. Each sucks the marrow for their own sweet end. For power and glory they crook and bend. Body bags and battering rams, coffinless graves for gentle lambs. Soldiers die for lords on high, women and children for you and I. The billowing smoke on our TV screens mark the place where women scream to lament the child vaporized by a bomb made by you and I. In the rubble, a tiny hand reaches for the stars that now lie blasted on the sand. Blown from west to east, the light is dying as the savage beast of a rich man's creed rises from the ashes unseen. Belief is still as the voice of a savior once followed is now apocryphal. Yet, overnight, seeds are sown. Quietly, thousands gather, all unknown, to raise a whisper against the tyranny of greed. From sorrow deep are humans freed. The winds of change whisper peace. All are equal, corruption cease. I reach for far-flung specks still in sight. Our dreams as glimmers in the blackest night. They may one day burst into fire, to rekindle faith, to inspire. Will you be the mad one to remind me I am sane? Life still grows in a wasteland scorched with want and pain. Meet me at the stomping ground of freedom. I'll stand you in good stead. Dance with me and sing in memory of the dead.
The second poem is called On the Ledge of Courage, and I wrote this during a time of darkness in my life when the danger of death was present, and I needed a way through the darkness. And so I wrote the poem as an acknowledgement of the beauty and preciousness of life, and in particular to honour the ways that ordinary people reach out and help each other. It was during the COVID pandemic where we saw and heard countless stories of acts of kindness and care. Fear and courage can live within us at the same time, in the same way that we can have strength in our vulnerability. And the physical ledge referred to in the poem, it's inspired by the Great Skellig, or Skellig Michael, which overlooks the Atlantic Ocean. But this ledge is in all of us, and we often have to dive into the unknown for both ourselves and others. And hopefully that's what On the Ledge of Courage is trying to say.
How can I be there when darkness sets in? How can I love you from deep within? How can I reach you when no one else can? How can I hold you when my courage has run? How can I touch you when we are apart? How can I share you with all of my heart? How can I give you all that you need? How can I protect you? I hear myself plead. What if I crumble, a slave to my fears? Seeking shelter away from the wounds of your tears. The tyranny of weakness won't let me lie in peace by your side as the hours slowly die. I fly like a bird on the cliffs at the edge of the sea, squawking at gods to set me free. Caught between worlds and liminality, while facing the abyss of eternity. On the edge of fear, I tremble. On the ledge of doubt, I dissemble. On the ledge of my faith, how far will I fall? On the ledge of my love, will I answer your call? Shall I step backwards? Let selfishness win? Crawl with my cruelty, my weakness, my sin? Or step forward in love and taste the divine? I am your God, and you are mine. On the ledge of courage, standing tall for thee, I will fly like a bird to set you free. plunging deep into oceans, or soar to the skies to retrieve the light for the stars in your eyes. I am your breath, and you are mine. I am your life till the end of time.
The next poem is called Ode to a Coolock Queen, and this is written from a female perspective, and it's about exploring identity and gender and the idea of finding your way for a woman who comes from a working class community. And I like the quote by Sylvia Plath where she says, "It is about being true to my own weirdness." So it's an oral, I call it an oral storytelling poem, and it is a reflection of what it is to be born out of a working class environment. So I like to dedicate Ode to a Coolock Queen to all people from working class communities who find a way to become their own kings and queens. Ode to a Coolock Queen. Home was a concrete jungle, an estate of grey, foraging for faith amongst men who pray for my salvation, yet could not disguise their lust for my tongue to make them rise. Hatred seeps from robes of purple, a pathological fear of feminine. Priests and nuns in church and school, occasionally kind, except those who rule, with a ferocious eye, beating pupils who would dare defy the word of man, who believes he is God, and suffer the children with an iron rod. An arid greyness from my schooling years. In a Coolock hellhole, I was reduced to tears. In your deeds, thy God is never benign. Yet for virgin mothers, I reserve my bile. Flinty souls and black and white, with a flaccid God and a ferocious bite. Frustrated hags of women, married to a chimera. A fateful hatred of Sodom and Gomorrah. I was intelligent, sharp, could have done well, yet rebel in anger against the pounding hell of celibacy abstinence. Your oppression still rankles. You wonder why we were always thankless. At 12 receptive, a child confused, by 15 recalcitrant with nothing to lose. Through constant lashings, I refused to bow, nor ingest the hatred from your poisoned vow. We were corralled by nuns with strangled itches, the song of life from Hecate's witches. Vixen bitches and their forbidden yearnings, hypocrisy and smite, scar our love of learning. I tried to be good, but the crevasse is wide. Distancing your favourites from filth who will slide into sex and debauchery, a life in the flats. By the nuns I am banished to a faith on my back. No point in teaching a slut on her way to single motherhood, for her soul we shall pray. So, nonchalant to my simmering scarves, I'm a class A bitch with bitter scars, as your murderous mutterings and glassy-eyed stares mock me silent while feigning to care. When not in school, we laugh and play on street corners where wild dogs stray, long summer evenings playing rounders, bottles of club and quarter pounder. I dream of freedom over concrete walls while playing scotch with tattered balls. My garage houses the homemade disco, kissing with tongues, smoking al fresco.
My next guest is the host of A Bolt from the Blue, a poetry and spoken word event transcending the boundaries of the physical and digital, welcoming in hundreds of creators from all across the globe. He is the author of the poetry collection Once Upon a Time There Was, and next year his second collection will be published. He is currently getting ready to publish a book featuring over 70 different writers, all aged over 70. A filmmaker, collaborative writer, performance poet and producer of the new Pitsligo Spoken Word Festival, I am delighted to welcome to Eat the Storms, Finn Hall.
Hi, my name is Finn Hall. I come from the northeast of Scotland, specifically from a village called Newport Sligo. And I am a poet, I'm a filmmaker, I am a collaborator, a Zoom show and live show host, publisher, and any other R you can think of at the end. Thank you. I'm going to read a couple of poems from my, this first one is from my first collection called Once Upon a Time There Was, Now There Isn't. It was out last year. And this is an old poem, it's called Man Behind the Curtains. How odious the night, how grey and gloomy hang the heavy clouds, ponderous foreboding. The moon, a yellow haze lurking in the dark corner of the sky, haunting, looking down, encroaching on my memories, hopes and aspirations, dreams, causing them to die. A sullen air bespokes me tonight, touches my very bones. Consternation is my password, unexplainable, unknowing, but still there, biting at my shadow, glowering at my reflection. No cautious or friendly word can alter, nor change or lift it. It stays, causing tremors of despair, uttering statements of dejection with my senses, breathing fear and sorrow in my direction. What lurks there? Who goes there? Come out from your encloakment, expose my hopeless mind, stop me fumbling, groping through this world. Make it bright instead of a dismal, hurting kind. A weight, such a weight, every man's sorrows, all their putrid thoughts escape, rest dolefully, so wearily on my shoulders. No hiding place, inside, silent screams. Outside, foreboding, untrusting eyes. I look, getting colder. How sad the world, the dense, dreary, crestfallen, abject people, tarnished souls, burnt out minds. No escape from here, no escape from fear. Poor folk, a hazy, crazy ambience descends from where? I know not, I care not one jot. Is this one of nature's jokes? This one's called I Wish the World Came with Subtitles. I wear hearing aids and am what they call profoundly deaf. I hear, but sometimes have difficulty picking out the actual words people say. I find it hard sometimes to catch all the words my fellow poets are saying when they do their reading. I wish the world came with subtitles. It's bad in my taxi with masks and the screen between me and my passengers to get them to speak clearly and give me their destination. I wish the world came with subtitles. Watching TV, it's great when programs have closed captions, but hate it when they don't, or some on-demand shows don't, or when the words are behind the actual audio. Behind the actual audio. I wish the world came with subtitles. I play my music too loud, my radio goes on too loud, my podcasts go on too loud. I'm not too proud if you ask me to turn it down. I don't know. I don't realise. I can't be sure how it sounds to you. I know it sounds to me loud, but not too. I wish the world came with subtitles. Hearing aids aren't perfect. They don't make things normal. They help. I'm not ignoring you. Your words are important, very important. It's just, I can't explain. Which is strange for one who uses words to make a point, tell a story. But, you know, I'm sorry. I wish the world came with subtitles. I take them out. Almost silence. Can barely hear the washing machine, the noisy washing machine when I'm in the kitchen beside it. The morning alarm, it rings for ages, disturbing my wife, waking her when she doesn't need to be awake. I don't hear it until it gradually gets louder. I wish the world came with subtitles. I wasn't born this way. It's hereditary. My grandma on my father's side, then my dad, but he never went and seen about it. Then me, now my daughter. My grandma's head was big and hung in a strap beneath her top. It squeaked feedback if you went too close. You had to speak into the box to be heard in a world before subtitles. I do enjoy the silence, switching mine off or taking them out and being alone in my head, enjoying the silence of being at one with me. I still need to know when I get shouted down for tea. Yeah, I realise that I should check to see if the volume on my phone is up. But wouldn't it be great if the world came with subtitles? Floating in the air, words destined for only the people that they are meant for. Or flick an imaginary switch and you can see everybody's words floating, soaring, shouting, swearing, counting, caring, perfect for finding found words for a poem. The silence of constant chatter in a world where words do matter. Choose your font, choose your language, hit translate. Was that? Ah, too late. Your word escaped in the breeze to hide amongst the trees. A world not perfect, but with subtitles. This last one was actually written for this year's Nari Pomo, the April's prompt month poetry thing. And this one's called Fire. That was the prompt, so it's fire. Flames red, creeping up, catching up, burning up, and it all starts with a spark, a small red glow in the ashes of yesterday's heat. Where is that tiny yet important gleam today, the one that hides in the dead embers, the one we need in this cold-hearted times, needed to inflame the world's complacency? We need to make the embers blaze, burst into glorious roaring reds and yellows, blues and greens. The revolution needs to be heard and seen, the torches held high, the feet raised to kick out the uncaring, selfish, greedy oligarchs, attention-seeking leaders, bottom-feeding bleeders, misogynistic stealers of lives and souls. Turn up the heat on those who want to leave us cold, leave us starving, young and old. Turning away the weak and sick, the lonely, destitute, the homeless, helpless, wailing, sailing away from death and bombs, homes, work, schools, all gone. The rich get riches thrown their way, and all that does is fan the flames of despair. They just don't care. The poor get their hopes taken away, chipping at their lives and hearts and leaving them burnt out, washed out, shattered. So, today, search out the matches, crumple up the paper, set the kindling, add the wood, strike the match, light the flame, burn down the society that refuses to take the blame for all the shame they bring upon the world, for all the pain, for all the lies and hypocrisy, falsity and disdain they happily bring upon us all. While sitting on their self-made thrones and rocket ships going into space. But if they don't like this place, they have the power to make it better for all of us. Instead, they crawl under their rocks and hide. It's time we smoke them out and burn their temples of self down to the ground.
My next guest on the podcast today is no stranger to Eat the Storms, as he was previously with us, and I am delighted to welcome him back. He is an Irish poet, playwright and fiction author from here in Dublin. Last year, he joined us to share poems from his collection Rapids, which was published by Finishing Line Press in August, and then that was followed with his historical fiction novel A Land Without Wolves, published by Dark Temple Books. Today, with his poem Dublinian, about the tour of Franz Liszt here in Ireland and his connections to that composer, this is the always exceptional Daniel Wade.
Hi, this is Daniel Wade, and I'm very glad to be featured on today's episode of Eat the Storms. A few years ago, I learned that the Hungarian romantic composer Franz Liszt undertook a tour of Ireland in the mid-19th century at the height of his fame. So in this poem, Dublinian, I imagine what he encountered whilst here. At the end of the year 1840, the composer and virtuoso pianist Franz Liszt undertakes a series of concert tours, first in the English provinces and then in Ireland. At this point in his career, he's a virtual legend in his own lifetime. His concerts are sell-out affairs all over Europe. He can boast to being the composer of Harmonie Poétique et Religieuse and Année de Pèlerinage. He's living a charmed life as a result, mixing with royalty and lodging at the finest hotels of the cities in which he performs. He has also just perfected a revolutionary form of concert style that will become known as the recital, wherein he plays an entire composition from memory, without the aid of sheet music, to audiences in thrall of his bravura and fevered originality as a performer. The best, as they say, is yet to come. Having concluded the erratic English leg of the tour in Wolverhampton, Liszt and his entourage cross the wind-lashed Irish Sea and make port 2 days before Christmas in Kingstown, or what is now Dunleary, right in the thick of a grueling snowstorm. From there they travel by a horse-drawn coach to theatres in Dublin, Cork, Clonmel, Limerick and Belfast, all the while battling the cold and rain and pitted roads of the Irish Midlands, their horses galloping to near exhaustion, the nights black as hell's ashpit. Everywhere they go, the concerts are met with everything from rapturous applause to unholy indifference, and the erroneous rumour that the maestro premiered his Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2 on stage in Limerick's Theatre Royal is first spread. Liszt's rendition of Rossini's William Tell Overture becomes his signature piece throughout his time in Ireland. In spite of the fact that the tour is ultimately a major flop, Herr Liszt will speak fondly of it, stating, "For my part, I leave it with all the honours of warfare." Acting as Liszt's stage manager for the Irish tour is one Joseph Augustine Wade Esquire, a failed surgeon and gifted composer in his own right from Dublin. By all accounts an alcoholic, a womaniser, and an appalling waster of money, Wade proves to be ultimately disastrous in his overseeing of the tour, and, it is widely believed, eventually dupes Liszt out of his final earnings. Wade is a master of self-sabotage. Blood and opium soak his memory through. His mind becomes a torture chamber, wherein a thousand grisly scenarios play themselves out with vivid, grinding inevitability. The Rotunda Grand Room, unrehearsed, December 22nd. The sonata's chords echo in corridors. Hollow, hammering notes give him the crackling cadence of hail and rain. No composer should conduct his own music. Someone else may interpret it better. Just as no poet should read his own words aloud. They are better suited to someone else's voice. Herr Liszt prefers travelling light. To unwind, he plays some Chopin on the hotel upright, willowy fingers coaxing a stale nocturne from the keys, holding notes down repeatedly, sometimes hammering the pitch to cacophony, or else pressing it back to dulcet accord. He smokes his final cigar down to a stub, savouring the hushed moment. It isn't the age of darkness or enlightenment when the pedals rust, the arias cease. Herr Liszt grafts through the whirling cold, nimble machinist of the yellowed ivories. There is a woman, Wade often thinks of. Her face and sweet sour words register a chronic throb in his heart. It pumps in delirium, like the kettle drum striking Totentanz to a close. If his memory serves, the concert hall is cavern quiet and stately, like a place where monks might convene for prayer and absolution. For now, no psaltery, no trumpet, no zither, no rampage or riot has a place here. No organ pipes trumpet their parched tones. But once the cellos are plucked, the overture rises like smoke to the choir balcony, and a deaf god, eyes etched from lidless marble and earlobes of granite, would swagger to the right in ritual of percussion. Trumpets, sound off. It's then that the red flags flap to his mind's eye, and his ears are filled with nothing but the dismal tempo of his own heartbeat. Is it a hymn to love or the failure of it? He cannot tell. Trumpets, be still. The maestro is bowing to the rogue wave of applause breaking over him. During the interval, mannered smiles are exchanged over glasses of shared wine. Aesthetics are everything here. The cerebral glamour of the rotunda upholds a palatial silence that even Wade knows better than to break. But is this how Turner painted his nightscapes? How Bach transcribed his suites for cello? He hopes the cultured talk is drowned out by curses, blistering vows, crosshaired slurs on nation and name, and for the earnest veneer of civility to combust with rapid spontaneity, a cloud of ash sliding down every throat. Dublin. See the workhorses and shit-speckled cobbles, the winter moon of fanged peeping Tom. The Angelus clang echoes Adagio, its operatic air heard from the stable lane to the quays, oil-smeared lamps and tavern sign signalling a feral grin to the girls in doorways. Wade's Tempest is in major and minor. Hailstones gush in slow harmony, sucks of sepia breath scrape the lung, an opium fantasia draws out the blade of borrowed time, patient tide. The salon is closed during daytime hours, a shutter of black steel hinged firmly on varnished oak. The muse is having one of her off days, and there he is, humbled and raw, unable to face the music. Even a dram of cheap port will do him for the night. Soon he'll be unable to sleep without the aid of a whiskey bottle. Immune to the stink of self, pockets empty to somber depths, he takes to playing chess with his soul, lingering with far more care over the white pieces, hastily pulling forward the black. Hunched over the glossy pianoforte, face flushed with gargle and the exhilarated trance, the strings tweet to clarity, he plays the unfinished oratorio like a card hand, melodic emulation, phrases of gloom hammering in slow movements, stealing the spine to satisfaction. 2022. Centuries after the fact. No idea if me and him are related by blood. No idea if the subtle harmony is mine or his. My hands rest on the piano keys as if on water. I can draw no music from them. My earlobes are granite. But the concerto will be finished, come whatever may.
My next guest today is going to entertain us not just with poetry, but also with music, as he is an entertainer, singer, songwriter, fairy tale author, painter, photographer, and video maker who was born here in Dublin, but based in Denmark for many years. A professional musician who toured all over Europe, from pubs to music venues to art museums, theatres, schools, prisons, and festivals. His sixth album was released in 2021, a collection of 12 original songs about Ireland addressing such issues as the Magdalen Laundries, and it was called This Is Where I Keep My Dreams. These are the mighty musings of John Buckley McQuaid.
Hello, this is John Buckley McQuaid reading Dear Mr. Taoiseach. Give us this day, Lord, our villas in Spain, Lord. Give us our castles with breakfast in bed. Send us a case of expensive champagne, Lord. Give us a place, Lord, to lay down our heads. We are the bowsies, the bullies and blackguards. We are the rulers of all we survey. We are the masters of fabulous flashcards. We're the broadcasters with nothing to say. Dear Mr. Taoiseach, from Cove to Killarney, how is old Ireland's proverbial bliss? Slather its lips with your blather and blarney. We'd be delighted to give it a kiss. Dear Mr. Taoiseach, where can we be off to? Following leaders to heaven or hell. People are people, from cradle to coffin. Somebody's always got something to sell. What of the babies they left on our doorsteps? What of the innocent girls that they shamed? What of the idols they fearfully worshipped? What of the bones that they buried unnamed? What of the tears they pretend not to notice? What of the orphanage blood in our veins? What of the postcards that nobody posted, telling us where we could find the remains? Dear Mr. Taoiseach, from Cove to Killarney, how is old Ireland's proverbial bliss? Slather its lips with your blather and blarney, we'd be delighted to give it a kiss. Dear Mr. Taoiseach, where can we be off to? Following leaders to heaven or hell? People are people, from cradle to coffin. Somebody's always got something to sell. Diarmuid and Gráinne and mighty Finn Ragin, Deirdre and Naoise who took to the hills, Joseph and Grace, they were wed in Kilmainham. Oscar believed that indifference kills. Patrick and Hilda still missing each other. William B. Yeats and a Maud who was gone, leaving the poet she loved like a brother, singing the praises of 59 swans. Dear Mr. Taoiseach, from Cove to Killarney, how is old Ireland's proverbial bliss? Slather its lips with your blather and blarney, we'd be delighted to give it a kiss. Dear Mr. Taoiseach, where can we be off to, following leaders to heaven or hell? People are people, from cradle to coffin. Somebody's always got something to sell.
I'll tell you a tale of the homeless hotels. Those chosen to serve have us under their spells. We live on the streets and we scrounge for a crust and curse the hyenas, betraying our trust. They say that there isn't, we know that there is. We're hungry and fearful and God help the kids. They're lost and they're lonely and strung out on drugs. They turn into monsters that nobody hugs. Ireland, 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 Ireland. Some get cake and some get crumb. Ireland, 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 Ireland. What on earth have we become? The merciless clergy abused and denied. For ages the blameless that they crucified. They buried them namelessly under the sod and offered novenas in praise of their God. They're burning down churches on faraway land. We may not agree, but we do understand. We're drinking and thinking and feeling the shame. We don't have the strength to be doing the same.
They're tearing down the laundries where cruelty prevailed, in gardens with forbidden trees whose walls we never scaled. Behind those gates they hid the shame that wasn't theirs to hide. They took our clothes and changed our names and trampled on our pride. Another Mary Magdalene, another stolen child, another broken covenant, another life defiled. They said we had no place to go with evil in our wombs, as angels fell like flakes of snow from Donnybrook to Tuam. They sent our babes across the sea in ships of grief and greed, for every babe would only be another mouth to feed. Another Mary Magdalene, another stolen child, another broken covenant, another life defiled. And while the Doyle and Diocese refuse to separate and keep on doing as they please, the rest of us can't wait to recognize what went before, a truth we know so well. There is a place in heaven for those girls who lived in hell. Another Mary Magdalene, another stolen child, another broken covenant, another life defiled.
Next up today on the podcast, we are diving into history for a poet who is going to share poems from her new collection, 30 Angry Ghosts, which gives voice to the furious spirits of 30 famous historical figures. She is from Suffolk in England and is the founding member of the Suffolk Writers Group, offering a range of courses in creative short stories, flash fiction and poetry. Joining us for the first time today on Eat the Storms with ghosts including Helen of Troy and Anne Boleyn, this is May Black.
Hello, this is May Black, and I'm going to share some of my poems with you. So they all come from a collection which is called 30 Angry Ghosts, and each one is in the voice of a different historical character, speaking as their ghosts. So I'm going to start off with one of my favourite poems in the collection, and this one is called Helen of Troy, and she's explaining why she is so angry for being blamed for the Trojan War. Helen of Troy. It was all my fault, I suppose. I tricked Paris with my beauty, tangled his heart in the webbing of my silken locks, drew his soul with the power of my sapphire eyes. The ruby of my lips was poison to his wits. For one faithless wife, a city ground to dust, Hector and Achilles slain. All for Helen, all for beauty. So now, beauty be damned, I choose ugly. Resplendent in hideousness, I come to you at the knife edge of night and nightmares. my fish eyes bulging with filmy decay, my cheek a nest of maggots, my teeth black with rot, and I will rip the flesh from your face, the skin from your back, the muscle from your bone. And as I wrench the hair from your scalp and pluck your pretty teeth one by one, your lifeblood will ooze with gratitude. For beauty is skin deep, shallow and weak. Ugly lasts forever. So that was Helen of Troy complaining of being given all the blame for the Trojan War. So this next one is in the voice of Lamalinke. So some poems in the book are from very famous historical characters. This one, she's not quite so well known. She was she lived in Central America when the Spanish invaded, and she was a slave to Hernan Cortes, and she worked as his translator and mediated between the Spanish and the Aztecs. And for that, she is seen as a traitor to her people. But as I said, she was a slave, so she didn't have much choice in it. So this is written from her point of view for people who say that she was a betrayer. Lamalinke. I am Lamalinke, the traitor, the betrayer. She who sacrificed her own people to the greed of a foreign power. But who were my people? My mother, who sold me as a slave? The men who took me, chained me, traded me for trinkets, who in their ignorance gave me to the Spaniards? I was a slave, a possession, a commodity, a no one, a nobody. Yet I was a slave who set her own value. For my words had wings and could fly to any man with ears to hear. Words of negotiation and resolution. Words of peace and good sense. Surrounded by men in blood-crusted armour, their hot hollow eyes, their pitiless laughter. I never succumbed. I never lost my cool. I was the face of the moon in a darkening sky. I was the bright shining stream running over the rocks. And my words were yellow leaves drifting in the water. And my words were quicksilver fish, rainbow ribboned. But the leaves were dragged into the blood-swelled mud, and the fish was swallowed by crocodiles. Crocodiles with the face of Moctezuma and the face of Hernan Cortes. I never fired a gun, nor threw a spear. I never burned a village, nor sacrificed a child. But somehow my sins number more than anyone's. Still, I would rather have your blame than your pity. For although I was only a slave, as so many people are, whether they know it or not, I was a slave who set her own value. Higher than corn, higher than jade, higher than guns or gold or men. Lamalinke. Translator, slave, wife and mother, despised and rejected, revered like no other. And the last poem I'm going to read is in the voice of Anne Boleyn. Now there's an urban myth, or a myth, that Henry VIII wrote Greensleeves for Anne. And that has been disputed, But for the sake of the poem, I'm going to pretend that he told her that poem was for her. And this is her reaction. Green was never my colour. Red, the colour of my dress that day. Red, the dying light in the sky. Red, the blood at the birth of my children. Red, the sword so quickly brought down. Henry, most famous king of England. How proud you would be of that. But famous for what? For being fat and gaudy, a jester too clownish to be cruel. I'd rather be a witch than a fool. And what came after, dear husband of mine? Your son died too young and soon was forgotten. Our daughter, my daughter, she is the one who survived and ruled far better, far longer than you. Greensleeves, an idle song for an idle man. Here is Elizabeth, my child, red hair still blazing. So I've been Mae Black and I've been sharing my collection of poetry, 30 Angry Ghosts. And if you'd like to buy a copy of my book, it's available on Amazon, both in Kindle and also in paperback form. So thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
For my final guest today on Eve the Storms, I'm delighted to welcome a guest to the show all the way from Malaysia. I think our second Malaysian poet to visit Eve the Storms, and this is a poet who has wowed me and the audience over and over again at the fabulous Flight of the Dragonfly spoken word online show, which is soon coming back to a live event in Brighton. Now, this guest has been published by the American Journal of Poetry, Beltway Poetry Quarterly and Borderless Journal, among others. He says he stumbled onto poetry just 5 years ago, and you are about to hear the reason that I am so happy he made that stumble. Thanks, apparently, to Kat Brogan of Northern Ireland. Here today on the podcast from Malaysia, this is the bloody brilliant Julian Matthews.
I'm going to begin with something on the light mode. It's called, How Many Ways Can I Prove to You I'm Not a Robot? So the internet wants me to prove I'm not a robot again. It gives me a set of square options and asks me to please click on image that contains a bicycle. So I spot a bicycle, click another bicycle, click, wait, there's only one wheel in here. Is that a unicycle? But it says specifically bicycle, not unicycle, not tricycle, not monocycle. I'm a detail-oriented man. I'm very specific about getting clear, specific, unambiguous instructions which demand clear, specific, unambiguous replies. But that image only has one wheel. And wait, the earlier one I clicked on had two bicycles. Bicycles, plural. The question says bicycle, singular. Are these trick questions? I'm wary of trick questions, so I click verify and the page refreshes. I fail the test. But phew, it gives me a second chance. Now it says, click on image that has traffic light on it. I'm not a robot. I know a traffic light when I see one, but wait, first bicycles, now traffic lights. Was this test designed by someone from the DMB? I haven't been so stressed since my driving test years ago, and back then I was more stressed about the parallel parking. Traffic light, click, traffic light, click. Wait, is the traffic light pole considered part of the overhead traffic light? I suppose so. Click, click, click. Wait, is the shadow of the overhead traffic light on the road considered traffic light? Well, there would be no shadow if there was no traffic light. Is this an existential test? Damn it, this is so vague. I'm a detail-oriented man. I'm very specific about getting clear, unambiguous instructions which demand clear, specific, unambiguous answers. I click verify, and get kicked out. Damn it. I just realized I was kicked out by a robot deciding whether I am a robot or not. How ironic. How judgy. How utterly ridiculous. The fact that I flunked out on your test, you silly reject robot, is proof enough that I'm human, after all. Hey robot, if you gave me a picture of 9 potential presidents and asked me to click on which candidate can actually do the job, I would click skip and move on. I also know what a bicycle is, you silly robot. I not only know how to identify a bicycle, I know how to ride one as well. Can you? And I can identify a traffic light when I see one. I know red means stop, green means go, and yellow means go faster. That's my choice. That's my prerogative. That's being human, silly robot. Being human is about taking risks. Being human is about making decisions, good or bad. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we run a red light and cause accidents. Sometimes we hurt ourselves. Sometimes we hurt others. Sometimes we fall off our bicycles and scrape our knee and it bleeds and it hurts. Sometimes we ride our bicycles home in the rain. Some days we ride so hard we can't tell whether it's raindrops or teardrops on our cheeks. That's being human, silly robot. But you'll never know. You can't even give clear, specific, unambiguous instructions that demand clear, specific, unambiguous answers. I refresh the page and it says, you have reached your verification limit for today. Please try again in 24 hours. I get off the internet and gripe to my wife about the robot. She says she just discovered she's been driving around for the last 2 months with an expired driving license. And she can't renew it online. I must drive her to the office next week to renew it. I'm a detail-oriented man. I'm very specific about getting clear, specific, unambiguous instructions. I nod approvingly. I'm not a robot, after all. At least someone appreciates this human. I touch my face to wipe away the tear that isn't there. The search. I know I shouldn't have signed the consent form without reading the fine print at the bottom. When we friended each other, it was only because we had 37 mutual friends. All of them were poets, writers, musicians, creative types. She said she liked my words and was curious about my right brain. I didn't think she meant that literally. When she asked whether she could probe my lobes, I thought she meant earlobes, not brain lobes. It sounded like a nerdy come-on, or perhaps she was just rhyming. I made a note to myself to look up probe my lobes in Urban Dictionary. When she said it would be minimally invasive and didn't require anesthesia, she sounded professional, like a surgeon. When she used the term remote brain mapping, I knew she was serious. Hell, I welcome any kind of intimacy in this lockdown isolation. All I had to do was just leave my AirPods on at bed at night, and all she needed was my phone number. She'd call unobtrusively when the app I downloaded sensed I was asleep. I obliged, thinking this was a sciencey millennial way to hit on me. The first time it happened, I thought it was just a dream or a tender head massage. The second time I felt it deeply, like when you stick a finger too far in your ear and it itches and it hurts. I heard her rummaging through my brain. She opened dendrite drawers she shouldn't have. I sensed her reaching behind my cerebral cupboards where I hid my stash of new ideas for poems and fragments of dreams. She squeezed my hippocampus so hard like it was the last bit of a toothpaste tube, and I felt some of my saddest memories pop out. She had struck a nerve, cupping my inner trauma in her hands, whispering over and over, "It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault." Once, as a teenager, I fell off my bike and had a concussion and it did an MRI. It was so scary, like entering a high-tech coffin head first. In last night's probe, she was all in. She prodded my amygdala, my emotional center. I felt her swinging on nerve endings, sliding down my synapses. I could almost hear her breathing hard, sometimes gasping inside of me. I have to admit, it was a little exciting. My axons were titillated. But then came the chiseling and scraping, like she was a fossil hunter chipping away at my neurons, like a prospector extracting precious stones or a paleontologist on her final dig. I could sense some part of me was being suctioned away. I thought I felt her dragging bits across my prefrontal cortex. Today, when I woke up, I messaged her immediately to tell her to stop. She replied flatly, almost too quickly, "Okay." Had she taken what she came for and no longer cared? Was my brain permanently damaged in some way? I felt nothing. Then I got up, pulled the curtain, and the sun streamed in, and my head felt lighter, and my heart filled up like a thousand rainbows.
Thank you so much, Julian. And now, to round us off for this episode, we have the final poem from the brilliant Mary Moynihan.
The final poem is In Time, which is a personal response to the changing landscape of our world today. And I wrote In Time during the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's about a dream for the future.
In time. In time, we will recover.
In time, there will be a vaccine, and we will be able to go outside.
To work, to the park, to the mountains.
To meet family and friends. To travel to the ends of the earth if we wish.
In time, we will rebuild our world. We will create an equal society where people count. Our friends, family, co-workers, and those who provide services and look after each other. We will get our values right, our priorities straight, and create a world for what counts. People, the planet we live on, and respect and dignity for all.
In time, we will breathe calmly again. In time, we will meet each other in the darkness of a theater space and know again the magic of a connection that is invisible, yet truly felt.
In time, we will hug those we love and have missed. In time, we shall mourn those that have died. In time, we will bear witness.
In time, we will create and imagine. What if?
In time, we will reject governments that do not act on our behalf. We shall create respect for the planet we live on. And know our atmosphere is clearing and our world can breathe calmly again. In time, we shall be true to our inner selves, listen to the voice of our inner souls, and follow our heart's desires.
In time, we shall serve ourselves and equally, at the same time, serve others. In time, we will fight the good fight, and at the same time, let go. In time, we will enjoy life and be present in the moment.
And one day, in time.
In time, we will realize.
There is no time.
Now, just before we finish up today, I'm going to leave you with two of my own poems. Last week, I left you with some poems which are featured in the latest issue of Dreek, Season 4, Number 9, curated by the wonderful Jack Caradoc. So thank you so much for that. And today, I'm going to read you one more of those poems, which hopefully will be featured in my collection coming next year called Back From Away. And then to finish, I'm going to leave you with a poem I wrote just last month after an early walk along the nearby beach. now local again after me being away for 25 years, where a man was skateboarding above the waves. This first poem is called The Blunt Butcher. Your father raised pigs, hidden haystacks in stony batter, a block away from curiosity. I recall standing mid-sty, head not much higher than twirling tail, unclear if it was coming out or finding a way back in. That prime pink flesh growing fatter and tighter amid all the concrete that never let any poor thing breathe. You too turned to butchery later, after you'd grown out of the uniform of security, locking every door to prevent anyone from getting in and observing the darkness for signs of any way out. In a stained white coat and knife without a single blemish, you gutted those pigs that were never your pets, examining their innards for pieces you missed. In a mortuary, back when I was 12, tall enough to face death, you lifted Aunt Hannah's hand, looking for the remains of who she was at once, before fattening flesh was tucked into another confined space that didn't allow you to breathe. Sometimes, I watched you sleeping on the sofa as the ink of the Evening Herald etched itself deeper into the flesh that scratched like sandpaper. Occasionally, after a choked, oink-like snore, I wondered if you'd found your way out, or were discreetly spying, looking for ways to get in. We were your pigs for a while, and you the butcher. But by then, your blade had grown blunt. And finally, this is called Early Morning, Men in Search of Sail Over Sea. At morning's breath, bodies trail above water, feather light. Man has gills where cords have looped into all that has been cut. Open-mouthed waves salivate under shadows neither voracious nor pelagic. I watch from the other side of landing, my feet subservient to this quickening sand that catches at the back of my throat like a desert confronted by an ocean. And I wonder what it takes to fly. Away is not always the solution to finding yourself adrift on such a course drown. Grains scratch the surface. Body drips over tide. Belonging can be as hollow as a shell, forgotten to echo. Crab climbs up from under. Without claw, I cannot control the pull towards this waste where cords are disappearing. Self-tied to cuts I had to open, pulling me deeper under land. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, we've reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly and I have been your host and producer for this episode, and I'd like to thank my guests today, who have been Mary Moynihan, Julian Matthews, Daniel Wade, May Black, John Buckley McQuaid and Finn Hull. As I said at the top of the show, for details on all of my guests, head on over to www.eatthestorms.com, click on the podcast section, and there you will find a blog post for every episode. This was episode 6, season 5. Now, just so you are aware, there is no episode next Saturday, but we do have 66 previous episodes for you to check out to keep you poetic while we are away. And they are, of course, all available on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, and iTunes. We are off next week to prepare for a special bumper episode on the 25th of this month. That is the 25th of June 2022, where we will be celebrating Pride Month. Yes, we will be having our annual LGBTQ plus Pride family episode, one of my favourite episodes of the season. So make sure you have your flags waving and your hearts open. Now, before we go, a couple of points to note. If you are in Dublin and available between 6.15 and 7.45pm on the evening of the 29th of June, the Fingal Poetry Festival are having their Poetry Slam event at the beautiful Malahide Library. I was fortunate enough to be the Balbriggan Poetry Slam winner, so I'm very excited to see who's going to take Malahide and join me in the Fingal Poetry Slam finals later this year. So that is Wednesday, the 29th of June at 6.15 at Malahide Library in the beautiful coastal village of Malahide here in Dublin. Also coming up this month is an evening with Karen Mooney, who was our guest last week. She will be launching her collection Missing Pieces, published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press, at the Moira Library in Moira in Northern Ireland on Thursday the 23rd of June from 6.45. If you heard her last week reading from Missing Pieces, then you know this will be an unmissable evening. And while we're in Northern Ireland, a huge shout out and thank you to The Monthly, the arts magazine from the Community Arts Partnership, run by Gordon Hewitt, another guest on the podcast, who just featured The Storms in an article in their latest issue, which you can check out online. That's at capartscentre.com/The Monthly. So a huge thank you for that to Gordon, and you can find a link to that in today's blog post. And finally, coming up next week on the 14th of June, Flight of the Dragonflies is back. It's online and via Zoom. And their fantastic featured guest this week is the exceptional prize-winning poet John McCullough. So you do not want to miss that. Now, you will be happy to know that myself and sub-editor for the inaugural issue, Gaynor Kane, are very busy reading through and reviewing all the submissions of poetry, prose and visual art for The Storms, the new journal, the brother and sister of Eat The Storms, this podcast. Submissions closed just over a week ago and we are currently swimming through all the fantastic submissions that came in. So thankfully, lots of fantastic acceptance emails will be heading out in the coming weeks, along with, of course, some apologies as we don't have room for everyone. But fear not, because issue 2 will be opening for submissions at the end of the summer. So do keep an eye out for that. I'm hoping that issue 1, the inaugural issue, will be launched at the end of the summer, and then issue 2 will hopefully have a launch date in either November or December of this year. Check out www.eatthestorms.com for all the details. But for now, that's it for me. I've been Damien B. Donnelly, thanking you for joining us. We will be back with you again in 2 weeks' time. So in the meantime, tune in to all our previous episodes. Get your pride flags blowing for the 25th, when we'll be back with a fantastic episode full of fantastic talents from the LGBTQ plus community. Until then, as always, you know what I'm going to say. So why don't you all join in with me as I say, stay bloody poetic!